Tonight is the Midwest premiere of the documentary Citizen Coke, which explores the effects of the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling on Wisconsin and the nation.
4 years after the Citizens United ruling opened the door for corporate political spending, we talk with one of the film's directors, Tia Lesson. Tia, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Well, before we pick up the thread of the story, what motivated you to make this documentary?
Well, gosh, you know, you talk about Father's Day, and I was just thinking about my dad, who died in 2010. He died in a VA hospital, and he died in the care of these wonderful women who work for the federal government, you know, and they were union members, and they gave him care 24/7, and it was loving and it was kind. And, you know, in 2009, there started to be these extraordinary attacks against public employees, like the nurses that gave care to my dad in his dying days. And that happened all over the nation. There were attacks on nurses and teachers. And you know, we were curious about what was behind those attacks, myself and Carl Diehl, my co-director and co-producer. And that sort of led us almost directly to the doorstep of Charles and David Koch, the billionaire extremists.
Well, you pick up the thread of the story with the Supreme Court decision. Here's the announcement of a ruling on a major case on campaign finance.
In Citizens United versus the FEC, Justice Kennedy has the opinion of the court.
First Amendment protection extends to corporations. Political speech is indispensable to decision-making in a democracy, and this is no less true because the speech comes from a corporation rather than an individual.
And that sets the stage for a lot of what you describe happening over the last couple of years. How big a shift was that decision?
I mean, it was astronomical. I mean, look, there's always been political spending in elections. There have been spending on corporations figure out a way and billionaires to spend money. But this just opened the floodgates. As we all know, we've all experienced that, and we've seen these flood of ads on the airwaves. But at the time, it was thought that the Citizens United decision was just going to affect, you know, the federal government and Washington, D.C. and politicians there. But we all know now that logic of Citizens United was extended to the states when Montana challenged the Supreme Court ruling in Montana that their corporate ban elections is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court upheld it and said, no, this logic of Citizens United applies to the 25 states where this corporate spending ban was in place, including Wisconsin.
And this opened the door. The Koch brothers, who you track in the film, were already big spenders in politics. How did this affect what they were able to spend?
Well, look, they figured out ways creatively, you know, to spend money for years now. I mean, David Koch, we have to remember, ran for vice president on the Libertarian Party ticket in 1980. I mean, he had these extreme positions. He wanted to get rid of the EPA. He wanted to get rid of the Food and Drug Administration. He wanted to get rid of Social Security and Medicaid. And he wasn't able to do that as a political candidate. But, you know, now he's deployed hundreds of millions of dollars of his own money, of his corporate money, of his other billionaire friends' monies. And he's essentially been able to move the Republican Party to this very extreme position. So he's been spending this money very creatively, whether it's through his political group, Americans for Prosperity, which he and his brother founded in 2003, or through this whole network and web of interlocking organizations that they're not super PACs, but if they were super PACs, they'd have to disclose their spending. You know, they're essentially front groups.
Let's give a listen to David Koch, excerpted in your documentary.
My brother Charles and I provided the funds to start the Americans for Prosperity. And it's beyond my wildest dreams how AFP has grown.
So beyond his wildest dreams, how Americans for Prosperity has grown, let's start honing in on Wisconsin, as you do in your documentary. How much money came in? How big a force was Americans for Prosperity in Wisconsin?
Well, we know that AFP had a lot of spending around, you know, initially supporting Scott Walker in his, you know, budget repair act, and then he so-called budget repair act, and then they came in very heavily around the recall. Look, we only know how much they spend when they tell us how much they spend, because so much of this money is hidden, and that's part of the problem. You know, Wisconsin used to have some of the strongest disclosure laws in the country, and after Citizens United, those laws were just, you know, eviscerated. So We know they spent, you know, millions of dollars. We know that they, you know, flooded the broadcast airwaves with ads. We know they sent out-of-state campaigners, not just to campaign, as they claim, on the issue, but, you know, they campaigned on behalf of Scott Walker. That's very clear.
The 2010 elections after Citizens United, they were a big win for Republicans around the country, and it particularly here in Wisconsin. They took control from Democrats of the governor's office, a U.S. Senate seat, two congressional seats, both houses of the legislature. They won bigger in Wisconsin than anywhere else in the country. How much do you see Citizens United and the Koch brothers playing a role in that win?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the Republicans Governors Association spent a lot of money on the Scott Walker race in 2010, and probably, you know, could have very well tipped the balance. We'll never know because we can't take this money out of the elections. We only know that money does have an impact, and usually, I think 90% of the candidates who have more money win. That's just a fact. But look, it not only helps determine who wins, it helps to determine who gets to run in the first place. And I think it scares away folks who otherwise might want to run for public office. For sure, it frames the issues. So David Koch put about $1 million into the Republican Governors Association, and the Republican Governors Association in turn spent about $3.5 million, or maybe $4.5 million, on Scott Walker's race. Koch PAC also supported Walker and maxed out on the contributions. So there's a lot of ways that the Kochs got money into this campaign, both 2010 and 2011 and 2012.
The argument from the U.S. Supreme Court on that ruling, and more so rulings since then, is that maybe you don't like money in politics, but political speech is the one thing that the government has to be as hands-off as possible on. Any attempt to regulate political speech is something the government should stay away from, and it isn't necessarily corrupting. How do you react to that?
I think when we talk about political speech, we have to talk about human beings who are speaking. You know, corporations, you know, they don't speak. You know, they're legal. They're pieces of paper formed, you know, they're not covered by the First Amendment, and I think that we need to clarify that. I think there's a movement afoot to strengthen the First Amendment to make sure that it's clear that the First Amendment, you know, applies, you know, to individuals and not to corporate entities.
Well, following the narrative of the story you tell, there were the 2010 elections, and then there was 2011 when Wisconsin was all over national headlines for a few months there with the budget repair bill you mentioned that Governor Scott Walker and Republican legislators eventually passed and signed into law. How much do you see the Koch brothers' hands in that?
Well, look, I think it's clear that Scott Walker was doing the bidding of forces, you know, outside of the state of Wisconsin. I mean, what we saw, I think, and what we understood what was happening to be was an attempt by the extreme right, not to solve a fiscal crisis in the state of Wisconsin, if there ever was one, but actually just to kneecap their political opponents and to take out the money that the unions were spending on the Democratic opponents of Scott Walker. You know, that's what we saw coming down here, and that's what we've seen, I think, in Michigan and other places where similar laws have been passed.
Well, they've said since then that lowering the power of public employee unions, dramatically lowering it to bargain, has saved the state money. It's saved school districts and local governments money. It has worked in a fiscal way. It has solved budget problems.
Look, the budget problems, as I understand it, were created in some no small part by Wall Street. I mean, every state suffered in the aftermath of the economic crisis, and it wasn't the teachers and the nurses and the correction officers that caused that. I mean, they were victims just along with everybody else and ordinary Americans, and Wall Street got bailed out. But public employees got targeted. I don't understand that. I know that Scott Walker, while he, you know, severely cut public education and public employees' salaries and benefits, gave whopping tax cuts to the wealthiest in the state. I'm not sure how he gets away with that, but how he gets away with saying that you know, does justice to, you know, the education for Wisconsin's children.
A lot of the voices in your documentary Point to Wisconsin as kind of a first domino, a test case that other states were watching to see what they could do next, how far they could go on issues like public and private unions, for that matter. Was that a fair evaluation?
Look, that's certainly our point of view. I think what we saw happening was, you know, and still is, a state-by-state effort on the part of the extreme, you know, right of the Republican Party to redistrict, to take out public employee unions, to really essentially super enfranchise the corporate interests and the wealthiest through these, you know, deregulated campaign finance, and take out the rights of, you know, working people to vote and people of color through these, you know, voter ID laws, and taking out public employee unions, who are the biggest, you know, contributors in the political process outside of these corporate interests, and they're sort of the bulwark, you know, to these corporate interests. That's what we saw, and it's happening state by state. I think we just heard one of the governors say, you know, if you want to change America, you know, do it in the states, do it in the state houses. Don't do it on Capitol Hill.
We're talking with Tia Lesson. She's co-director of the film Citizen Coke about the effects of Citizen United Act 10 and the subsequent campaign to recall Governor Walker. We'll continue that conversation in a moment. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with filmmaker Tia Lesson, who co-directed the documentary Citizen Coke. The film explores the impact of the Citizens United ruling that allows unrestricted political spending by corporations in elections. It focuses on the Koch brothers' financial support of Governor Walker's campaign and its effects on politics in Wisconsin.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. 4 years after Citizens United, how has and is corporate money impacting politics in our state and nationwide, for that matter? And how about the union side of things? Are you a union member? How did it affect you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. We'll go right to our callers now. We've got Charlie on the line in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. My biggest question about the Citizens United case is that the justices who voted for it, namely Scalia, Thomas, et cetera, the conservative judges, all ascribe to a constitutional theory of trying to look at the intent of the framers of the Constitution. Yet the framers of the Constitution never viewed corporations as citizens or as persons, that they were viewed definitely as different entities. So I always wondered, how could they justify this hypocrisy between their stated goal of interpretation of the Constitution and what they came up with Citizens United?
Charlie, thanks a lot for the call. You got responses definitely in your documentary, including from Russ Feingold. What was the back and forth on that issue?
Well, no, the caller's absolutely right. You know, this is a remarkable decision for its lack of consistency and its break from precedent. And it's clear that the justices just went overboard and just did this overly broad decision. We were quite surprised to find out that one of the justices, Clarence Thomas's wife, is a Tea Party founder. And in the aftermath of Citizens United, her organization actually benefited from the decision itself. They got $500,000 in contributions that she wouldn't have been able to get before Citizens United. It was a clear conflict of interest. There were many conflicts of interest. Scalia and Thomas had both attended fundraising retreats that the Koch brothers had organized. Very odd that they weren't forced to recuse themselves on this decision. One last thing, I mean, Clarence Thomas has actually been aided by the Citizens United organization back in 1991 when he was up for confirmation. Citizens United actually ran a $100,000 ad campaign on his behalf.
You mentioned the Tea Party, and in your documentary you show rallies both from pro-union demonstrators during the Act 10 argument and from Tea Party counter-protesters, events organized by Americans for Prosperity. There was argument on both sides over who had a real grassroots following. First, the Tea Party. There were real people there. Were they a grassroots organization, or do you see them just as an invention brought about by heavy funding?
Well, we do know that the first talking points for the so-called Tea Party were issued decade ago, and they were issued by the FreedomWorks and Americans for Prosperity, and this was not coming from the grassroots. Now, that's not to say that there aren't real people sitting in these halls and out at these rallies. I don't know that they know that Charles and David Koch have given so much money to these efforts. I wonder what they'd say if they knew that. I think what might have been a populist uprising was hijacked by these billionaires. And I think their interests are quite different from these billionaires.
And as we saw demonstrations after Act 10 was introduced, there were accusations from conservatives and Republicans that this was kind of ginned up by unions, out-of-state people being bussed in to boost the numbers. You were filming on the Capitol Square for a lot of that. Do you think there was anything to that?
Well, look, you guys were here. I think you know the truth of that. Look, unions are people. I mean, corporations are pieces of paper, but unions are real people. They're made up of millions of working people around the country who've decided that they want to collectively bargain and over wages, over working conditions. I think what struck me when I was here was not just the union members that were out here, but the farmers and the students and the police officers and the firemen and the people that weren't even affected directly by Walker's attacks. They all came together in a pretty remarkable way. We also were struck by the number of Republicans that were out in the streets who felt really betrayed by what Walker was doing. People who'd voted for Scott Walker but didn't vote for that. Those are some of the people that we followed in our film.
But in the recall election soon after, Governor Walker was non-recalled, I guess not re-elected exactly, but very similar to margins to what he had won his original election in.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, you can't really take the money out of the election, so you don't really know what would have happened if Scott Walker hadn't had a war chest, you know, eight times as large as Barrett, if outside groups hadn't spent twice as much on his behalf. Who knows? What I do know is that money, you know, not only helps people get elected, it helps frame the very issues that dictate our public policy.
And a couple of years after 2010 and those 2010 elections, President Obama won re-election. He won Wisconsin for a second time in a row. Does that show limits of the campaign spending on the Republican side that you're talking about?
I think it shows exactly why the far right wants to take out the unions, you know, because it was really, you know, the unions that delivered the votes and spent the money on behalf of Obama. So I think that's they're in it for the long game. You know, 2012, sure, they didn't win. A lot of this money, you know, didn't achieve their goals, especially in the presidential race. But look, they're changing the very landscape. They're redistricting. They know, look, there are 440 billionaires in this country, and there are a whole lot more individuals. I think they've got to cheat to diminish our vote, and they're at it, you know.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Herman on the line in East Troy. Herman, hi.
Hi, this is Herman.
What do you think, Herman?
I think that our government is really in trouble with people like the Koch brothers. Unfortunately, I haven't seen her movie yet. But there's too many outside entities like this that are causing scoundrelism in our government. And I mean, it's not the left, it's not the right, it's all of them. We really need a grassroots change from the bottom up.
Thanks for the call, Herman. So after the time period covered in your documentary, are you seeing that kind of grassroots response, calls for change, anything that might take root?
Well, I think we know that hundreds of communities around the country have voted to take money out of politics. I think there's a whole movement, voters in, money out. This film nearly didn't see the light of day because David Koch serves on the board of a couple of public television stations. Our funding was cut for this film, and we saw 3,500 people come to our rescue, many folks from Madison and Wisconsin, to make sure that our film got to the screens here. And so I hope a lot of people come out, watch the film at the cinemas here in Madison and Milwaukee, and tell us what you think.
As you say, it was a rocky road. I was just going to ask you about the PBS story there. It's been a rocky road from production to release of this film. A lot of it is set here in Wisconsin. How important is it for you that it's now premiering in Milwaukee and Madison?
Well, we're very moved to be back here. And we showed the film at the film festivals in Milwaukee and Madison. The response was, you know, very touching to us. And you know, this film... You know, I hope that folks come to the theater, that you might see yourself in the film. We want to know what Wisconsinites think about this film, and we want to use this film to support what you're up to, you know, these days.
And what, as people see this, you mentioned they might see themselves. What do you want Wisconsinites to take away from the documentary as they see it?
You know, I think that it's all about talking and conversation, you know, and trying to figure out, you know, what our vote really means. I hope that people... who maybe are so angry and so, you know, demoralized by what happened here in the last few years, want to reengage and understand that their vote really matters. And if their vote didn't matter, these billionaires and corporate interests wouldn't be spending all that money just to sway, you know, the electorate. So I hope folks, you know, use this film to reengage with the political process.
Tia, thanks a lot for joining us in the studio today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
That's Tia Lesson. She's co-director of the film Citizen Coke. The documentary premieres tonight in Milwaukee at Landmark Downer Theater and in Madison at Sundance Cinemas.